Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you so very much for joining us. We are so thrilled to have James Corbett join us of the Corbett Report. He is an individual who speaks his mind, and boy, do I have respect for that. I mean, it's so hard to find people who really use open source intelligence, who think for themselves, who are willing to say the way it is. I'm just so grateful to have him join us. He's been living and working in Japan since 2004. The Corbett Report website in 2007 has been an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, economics. He does a podcast, Center for Research on Globalization, BoilingFrogsPost.com, the international forecaster, who he's well known for writing for, of course, from analyst Bob Chapman. And he did that famous 9/11 conspiracy theory, which go to the Power Hour guest section. I love it, love it, love it. Websites are CorbettReport.com and FukushimaUpdate.com. James, thank you so much for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Thank you for having me back on. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and your informed listeners.
Oh, well, thank you so very much. This, you know, world is in a mess right now. And then on top of all of the, you know, incredible election issues that are being dealt with, which really are, I'm being sarcastic, we've got this Zika virus now, which is the only other news story anybody's hearing about, really, in this country anyway. What is it like in Japan? Are you hearing about it as much in Japan as we are here in the U.S.?
Probably not as much as you are, but it is an international story, so there is some attention being given to it right now, and it's popping up all over the place. I heard that there has just been a if not confirmed, at least suspected infection in Russia now. So it really is getting all around, and the hype is being spread all over the place as usual, as we've seen with so many of these different outbreaks in the last few years, whether it's swine flu or Ebola or any of these other things that was certainly going to kill bajillions of people and somehow didn't end up doing so.
Right. What do we know for fact? What do we know? Because there's so much being speculated. I mean, I'm going to say one thing about the WHO, who came out on Friday and said there's no causation that has been established for this. I mean, what are you talking about? You've been saying since day one, it's this, it's this, it's this. And then they said, well, there's no causation. No proximate cause has been established. So what do we know for true, for facts, in the case of the Zika virus?
All right, yes, good question. Let's get down to some brass tacks. What is Zika virus, first of all? It is a flavivirus, which is a genus of viruses that is in the family Flaviviridae. And I'm not a virologist, but I mean, I think it's important to understand that this is related to, it's in the same genus as West Nile virus, dengue virus, yellow fever, those types of viruses. So it's that type of virus, and Zika was first isolated in the Zika forest in Uganda in 1947. So it is common in Africa and Asia. It's been known about for a long time. Zika fever has been well known in India for a very long time. So it's not a new virus at all, but it is new to the Western Hemisphere. Its first known outbreak in the Western Hemisphere occurred last year in Brazil. And this is now where apparently this panic is setting in. Now, usually, Zika virus is just an infection that will last 2 to 7 days, and generally, it's pretty nondescript. The symptoms are pretty nondescript. Fever, rash. Usually, you get over it in 2 to 7 days. There's no treatment possible. You just kind of tough it out, and it goes away. But now we're being asked to believe, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, that because this outbreak in Brazil seems to have, in some way, be in the general area of this sudden outbreak of microcephaly, which is babies being born with small heads, that somehow the two are related. And that is about as close as we get, is that they're related somehow. And just to give you an example of that from the actual medical literature, the JAMA Ophthalmology Journal just recently released an article with this title, and listen to this: Ocular Findings in Infants with Microcephaly Associated with Presumed Zika Virus Congenital Infection in Salvador, Brazil. Now, let's decode that doublespeak for a minute. This is so they're talking about ocular abnormalities, problems with babies' eyes that are being born in Brazil. But these are babies that are that have microcephaly, small circumference heads, that have been associated with Zika virus. It doesn't mean that there's a causation link that they've discovered. And it's not even associated with Zika virus. It's associated with presumed Zika virus. They don't even know if the mothers had Zika virus, let alone if these babies ever had Zika virus. But they're presuming it because the pregnant mothers at one point reported a rash or something like that, which again is a very general symptom. So there's so many layers of guesswork going on here, but they're just trying to link the two. And it really does beg the question, what kind of agenda is behind this?
You are so right. And I'm so glad to hear you say that, because something just doesn't come out of nothing. Remember how we had Gulf War illness that for 25, 29 years now, gee, we just can't figure it out. Chronic fatigue, mystery illness, all these mystery illnesses out there. And then all of a sudden they have a Zika virus. They've got it named, the epidemiology tracked down totally, and where it came from, how many people are infected with it. And all this information was just way too convenient. Now, we also have the history of the U.S. government being involved in mosquitoes and using those as human-borne or as animal vectors for infection. And the U.S. government was guilty of doing that back in the 1950s and 60s. And they let out balloons with mosquitoes over small black towns in Florida, Avon Park, Florida, to see how many people would become ill as a result of that. So, I mean, they've already set the precedent. We know they can do it. We know they are doing it.
Yes, you are not wrong.
Now we've, and so we've got this unusual thing who just all of a sudden is starting to cause microcephaly. Microcephaly is not something that is new, and it would take years for there to be the number of people, of babies, that are affected by this microcephaly. There's got to be another cause. So what do we know are the things, what do we know are in contention for the Zika virus?
Well, let's add another layer of complexity to this, because we're just taking for granted that there really has been an increase in microcephaly cases in Brazil or anywhere else. In fact, that might not even be true. The original reports, if you read most of the hype reports, they'll talk about over 4,000 cases of reported microcephaly. That's reported microcephaly. Of which, so far, the latest figure that I saw, I haven't seen an update to this figure, it's been around for about a week now, 404 cases of confirmed microcephaly, of which 17 of those cases has been associated with the Zika virus. And again, we know what that associated with means, doesn't mean a lot. But think about that. They talk about this 4,000 babies being born with this birth defect. First of all, without context to tell you how many are usually born and what we would expect, but then also they don't tell you, oh, well, we've only actually found it in 400 of them, and oh, only 17 of them had any sign of Zika virus. So it's just layer upon layer upon layer of obfuscation to the point where there may not even be a microcephaly outbreak going on right now of anything unusual.
Right.
And let's put that in perspective. What is microcephaly? It's defined by the circumference of the child's head at the time of birth, but it is an arbitrarily selected number. And generally, if you're not screening for it, those borderline cases will not be diagnosed. But now we're in the situation where every baby is being screened for it, so they are finding more examples of it. That is to be expected. And in the United States, for example, there are estimates of anywhere from 800 to 25,000 cases of microcephaly a year. That's the range of the estimates, which is over a factor of 30 difference between the low end and the high end of that estimate. That's huge, and that's because it is generally not screened for so carefully. So there's a huge question mark over so much of this, and we're only starting to get the first signs of what could be evidence that maybe there is a vertical vector, i.e. from pregnant mother to the fetus in utero, way for the virus to travel across the placenta, which they don't even have any actual evidence of that. They're just starting to collect some evidence. So again, there's so many layers on this. What we are actually sure about is that there were a couple of very big changes that occurred in Brazilian health, the way that their health system works in 2014. One of them was the mandate to vaccinate pregnant women against medical advice, to vaccinate pregnant women with not only tetanus vaccines and not only the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, but also the DTaP vaccine, DTaP or DAPT or DPT. It's sometimes referred to in different ways. And that vaccine specifically has not been tested for human safety in pregnant women. And that was suddenly in 2014, the Brazilian Health Ministry started recommending that for pregnant women. Recommending or mandating, I'm not sure. I still can't peg down which it was. But at any rate, pregnant women started to get that vaccine in 2014. And in 2014, they started adding a pesticide to the water supply in Brazil, specifically in the areas where this microcephaly outbreak is supposedly occurring. And this is a pesticide called piriproxifen. It's manufactured by Sumitomo Chemicals here in Japan. And lo and behold, the next year, we suddenly have this microcephaly outbreak. So there are some major changes that occurred in 2014, i.e. 9 months before the microcephaly started being reported, that took place that are not being considered. There's no, you know, the WHO isn't freaking out about that. They're freaking out about the Zika virus outbreak. So again, the question is, what are they covering up? And there is every possibility that they're covering up perhaps an adverse vaccine event, or perhaps a reaction to the pesticides, perhaps a combination of those two factors. But it would, at the very least, explain why we've seen, apparently, the Zika virus spreading around Latin America, but we haven't seen the microcephaly being reported in the same numbers in other places, only in Brazil. Why would that be? Perhaps there are different environmental factors going on.
Well, it seems so suspicious, so incredibly suspicious that they came out with all this blustering of here's what it is and here's what's happening. And oh, my gosh, we're all going to die and have small heads of babies. And then all of a sudden, well, there's been no causation established. What are you all talking about? We'll be back with our guest today, James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, FukushimaUpdate.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. 4 minute break. This is Joyce Rondley. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. We're talking with James Corbett today, CorbettReport.com, a gentleman who has his finger on, just it seems like he makes way too much sense all the time, globalresearch.ca. I really look forward to, I like reading his work at globalresearch.ca also, international forecaster. He is an incredible writer, and he just explains it the way we need to hear it because he makes way, like I say, way too much sense. We're talking about the Zika virus today and the implications of this. If what you say is true, how many directions could this go? What would you say is the agenda behind it? And what do we need to be concerned about, or what might we see in the future from the WHO or CDC?
I think actually our first reaction to this from the general public should not be to simply accept the narrative that they're painting for us, that there is this pending threat that we all have to be careful about. I think they need to really demonstrate that to us before we start changing our lives and the way we operate based on that information. So before we start contemplating whether these are bioweapons or anything of that sort, first of all, show us that there is something actually taking place. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I mean, a viral outbreak, okay, I can believe that, but is it causing these babies to have deformed, you know, brains and brainstems and what have you? Show us, prove that to us before we start even contemplating the rest. The other part that I want to stress, I mean, first of all, you can understand why the WHO does what it does, which is every time there's something like this that they can latch onto, they freak out and they immediately launch, you know, a full court press to try to convince the public that, you know, the world's about to explode, because that it has an institutional bias to that. I mean, if all you have is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail. So all they have is the hammer of being able to declare this is an epidemic, it's spreading across borders, so we have to step in. So that will happen a lot. And as even the European Parliament found out when they investigated the swine flu hysteria of 2009, they eventually discovered that the exact same people who sit on the WHO advisory board that advised the WHO to declare an epidemic emergency with the swine flu were the same people who also sat on boards of many of the vaccine manufacturers who made billions and billions of dollars when the WHO made that declaration. Because when the WHO says it's a pandemic emergency, suddenly that kicks in all of these billions of dollars of funding automatically to purchase vaccines from the vaccine companies. And lo and behold, surprise, surprise, what's one of the first things that the U.S. government did? Of course, we had Obama just put in $1.8 billion of funding that's going to go to mosquito eradication and taking care of poor pregnant women and, oh yeah, by the way, developing an emergency vaccine. So they're just going to pay Big Pharma to develop a vaccine and then buy that vaccine from them. So, I mean, there are some obvious agendas that are at play, not just here, but every time there's this type of emergency. But I think one of the most disgusting possibilities of all of this, specifically in this case, is, as I was talking about before, there's this new pesticide that they started putting in the drinking water in Brazil in 2014, piriproxifen. And this was put in specifically, it's supposed to create malformations in developing mosquitoes in order to kill or disable them so that they won't be able to spread viruses. But now we have this virus that's spreading supposedly through mosquitoes, and is causing this microcephaly. So what would be the answer to that? Hey, maybe more pesticide. So you use more of the thing that might actually be causing the microcephaly, if there is an outbreak. It's one of the most horrific things that you can think of, that basically they want this feedback loop to form. Give people pesticide, have the birth defects, blame the birth defects on mosquitoes, so you need more pesticide. That's just a chilling possibility, and we really do have to eliminate that one at first, I think, because that's just, it's just horrific to think about. But there are people on this planet who wouldn't think twice about doing something like that in order to make a profit, and unfortunately, we have no shortage of examples of that throughout history.
Oh, that is such a good point that you're making. And as well as vaccines that cause more problems than they could possibly ever eliminate. The idea that microcephaly is being used in this, I think, is so agendized because it's something you can see. Now, if they talked about a cardiovascular problem or a problem with the gallbladder that it caused, that wouldn't be, you know, something visual. That wouldn't be, oh my gosh, look at those little babies with those little tiny heads. This way, it seems to me they have created something that is a visual perception for people to hit on. And that's part of the agenda. We'll be back with James Corbett after this 3-minute break with the Power Hour. Stay tuned. Let's talk about Syria. Let's talk about Russia. Let's talk about what's really going on in the rest of the world. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Joyce Riley with James Corbett. We are talking to James Corbett today. CorbettReport.com. CorbettReport.com. And FukushimaUpdate.com. Is there anything else you think we need to be aware of the Zika virus or to be looking for in the future? Any kind of actions you think other than putting more money, throwing more money and time toward this agenda? Is there anything else that you think we need to look for, James?
Well, we should be aware that the WHO has a mechanism that they can use called the Public Health Emergency of International Concern. And there are some criteria for this. Basically, when there's an epidemic, it's spreading across borders, it can't be contained. They get to declare this thing, PHEIC, Public Health Emergency of International Concern, which is under this legally binding international agreement called the International Health Regulations, which I think is binding over 180-something countries. I mean, pretty much every country on the planet is a signatory to it. And what this allows is for the WHO to coordinate crisis response, not only with the actual territories that are affected by this, but also it hasn't been used for this purpose yet, but it potentially allows anything up to and including actual boots-on-the-ground intervention by, say, the U.S. military or NATO member countries, if they deem it necessary in response to this epidemic. And they declared it in 2009 with the swine flu outbreak. That was only the third time it was ever declared. They declared it with the Ebola virus, and they have declared it with Zika. And I don't think this is going to be the medical martial law lockdown here with Zika. It seems like it's going to probably fizzle away like the last few. But the point is, I think they're kind of getting people used to this PHEIC and their power to declare it. And, oh, look, you see, it's all right. We declare this and then it goes away because, of course, we're the ones, you know, making this go away. We're the ones saving the earth. And they're just kind of indoctrinating the public to it. But I think in the future, if there ever is either a real pandemic, a real emergency, or one that they've created, a bioweapon of some sort, again, they can use the PHEIC, and that gives them carte blanche to start intervening in countries and locking things down and forcibly injecting people and all of the nightmare scenarios that we've heard about. It allows them to do that. So I think we have to be aware of that, and I think we have to be aware that that has been applied in this situation. Again, I'm not saying that this is going to happen with the Zika outbreak, but I think we have to be screaming from the rooftops about this and not allow this to become just par for the course for the WHO to declare that kind of power.
Well, I think the very fact that they're storming in and emptying out bottle caps in people's yards, you know, is kind of a, you know, they're going through and of course, protecting all the people. That always scares me right there. Mm-hmm. But I think we can foresee that happening, of course, in the near future.
Right. It's psychological conditioning at this point. You know, submit, yes, get people to submit to the authority of these health professionals.
Exactly. And it always brings out more control. And of course, you know, I watched the vaccine issue and they said, you know, there is no answer. There is no vaccine. There's no nothing. Oh my God, we're all going to, you know, and we're all going to have deformed babies before long. And I mean, that was the kind of the feeling they were trying to get out there. And then they said, oh, there might be a vaccine. And then I got a letter from India, from one of our listeners in India, who says they are working on 4 vaccines for Zika now in India. And very close to perhaps having something. Well, isn't that convenient? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and all these things come out of West Nile virus fever, dengue virus, bizarre things that never happened but once in a lifetime, and then all of a sudden come in hordes. And it just doesn't make any sense. Scientifically, I don't think that's the way mosquitoes go, from 1 to 10 million sick mosquitoes. You know, it just doesn't happen that way. But and supposedly the mosquito doesn't fly very far either. And so they're saying, well, how are the mosquitoes getting around? Duh. You know, took them out up in altitude in airplanes and in balloons in small black towns like Avon, Florida. Well, anyway, that was the government doing that at that time. I foresee that it's going to be one of these new things all the time to generate vaccines. We've got 200 on the ramp now, getting ready to be prepared for people. 200 new vaccines. It's just beyond belief, the vaccine industry. Is it the same way in Japan?
It isn't to the extent that it is in the U.S., but I think certainly there aren't many people here who question the absolute safety and necessity of injecting, you know, all sorts of vaccines into people from an early age and throughout their entire lives. So I think there is not a lot of incredulity here. And I think it really is an international system at this point. There aren't many places on the planet where I think this has not just been completely internalized by the population.
Well, I'd like to talk about moving into Syria, because the geopolitical situation there, the situation that we are being told here, such a lie, you know, as opposed to what is really happening. What are your thoughts on? Well, let me just say, first of all, I think that if in 18 months you've been doing a whole bunch of bombing strikes and you haven't been able to get your job done and you have to admit defeat and, man, that ISIS has just outdone us, maybe we're in the wrong game. You know, maybe we're doing it incorrectly.
Well, put it in the bigger perspective, it's not just 18 months against ISIS. I mean, this is now supposedly, 4 years against Assad. And all it's done is create ISIS, which now they're, you know, supposedly trying to get. I mean, yeah, it's bungled attempt on bungled attempt, but it just keeps getting bigger.
What is the reality? I think the reality is that the U.S. wants the eastern area of Syria for its oil resources, and that's what we're determined to get regardless of how we're going to do it. And that's, to me, is what it's all about. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention is today Brennan, what is he, the national whatever director, security director, he said, we are in grade school in comparison to ISIS. ISIS is in postgraduate school. I mean, he said that on 60 Minutes. I mean, can anybody have any confidence in John Brennan?
They shouldn't. That is remarkable. That is remarkable. Yes, I mean, we stood up to the Soviets and, you know, all of this, you know, nuclear annihilation and all of that, but we can't take on, you know, this ragtag bunch of people isolated in the desert part of Syria and Iraq. It is ridiculous. I mean, there's so many things about this that are ridiculous that would be funny, I guess, if we weren't talking about real people and a real country being torn apart. But, I mean, look at the way that they have to twist themselves into pretzel knots to even report on what's going on in Syria right now, because suddenly we have this situation where, for example, there's a lot of attention right now on Aleppo, which is a city in northwestern Syria that may be about to fall to those dastardly government forces, you know, against the valiant rebels who are holding out. Picture that narrative in any of the other situations that we could imagine in where there's a terrorist force that has taken over a country or a city, and there are government forces trying to get them out, and the government forces are the ones in the wrong, and the rebels are the ones that are heroes. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It turns the whole logic of the supposed war on terror that we're supposedly fighting on its very head. And they're just hoping, I guess, that no one in the mainstream, you know, media consumption world is going to notice that. And maybe they aren't. Maybe people have been so propagandized that they will believe literally anything that is printed in the newspaper these days. But poll after poll continues to show that less and less people are trusting what's in the newspapers. So that is a positive sign in all of this. But I mean, that's just an indication of what the stage that we've reached in Syria, which is really quite remarkable. Because after all of these years and building up ISIS, and again, the former head of the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, said that it was a White House policy, really, to foster the tension that they knew was going to create something like the Islamic State, and then it created the Islamic State, lo and behold. All of this, years and years that have gone into this, really is being roadblocked right now, and it really is starting to fall apart. I mean, with the fall of Aleppo and places like that, there really isn't much of a resistance to the Syrian government / Russia / Iraq and Iran, all of these partners that are now cooperating there. They have really put a roadblock in this agenda. So I think we might see a resolution to the Syrian issue this year. And I don't think it's going to be the one that they wanted at the beginning, which was to overthrow Assad.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I talked to a girl from Syria and she said, we love Assad. Are you kidding me? That man has never done anything against his people. And my family loves him and everybody respects him over there. You know, and I want to go back to the idea that he has said no GMOs for my people. Now, granted, we're supposed to believe that he's using chemical weapons and wants to kill all of his people, but he won't let him have GMOs. Yeah. I mean, think about that. That's huge.
It is,
you know, yeah. And then moving into Russian Prime Minister Medvedev, these tensions in Syria, he was saying, you know, now we're sliding back into a Cold War. Just a few minutes ago, CNN came out with a headline, the West is rekindling the Cold War. It's all Russia. They're bad. But I get so tired of trying to go down these rabbit trails. Do you decide I don't want to go down the rabbit trails anymore? I don't want to just have to go and pick through all this stuff. Or do you decide to try and, I mean, what is the purpose of wanting to get to the agenda of what they're really doing as opposed to what we know they're doing?
Right. Well, no, I think that's the important point of this, because I think you're right. There is a fatigue at a certain point. Once you realize that the sort of narrative they're trying to paint and that it is a lie, then, yeah, you don't really feel the need to go through every single story and pick apart all the lies, because you've seen them all a million times and they're all pretty much the same lie. So once you get to what the actual agenda is, then I think the picking apart of every single story is not necessarily is not necessary to the same extent. So I mean, Syria, long story short, I mean, there are a lot of different people at the table in Syria, and they all have their own agendas. Sometimes they overlap, sometimes they conflict, and it really is causing some interesting tensions, including tensions between the US and Saudi Arabia, for example, which have been It's been driving a wedge, I think, between the U.S.-Saudi relationship over the last few years, amongst other things. And now we see Chinese President Xi Jinping just did a tour of the Middle East, including some warming relations with Saudi Arabia, and maybe Saudi Arabia turning more to China than they have been to the United States. So there are some major changes that are happening, I think, as a result of what's going on in Syria right now. And I think in some ways that's perhaps more interesting than the daily kind of reporting of, you know, which city is falling to which mm-hmm. force. Because I think ultimately this is, like World War One, for example, carved up that area of the world and made places like Syria the countries that it is today. I think we're seeing a similar carving up of the region right now. And it's depending on what way that falls, that could very well determine the course of 21st century geopolitics.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, let's talk about financial situation, because with China coming back online today, after being off for about a week, it was the Shanghai was down only about 0.65, and everything else was booming, including the Nikkei up 7%. I couldn't believe that. Boy, you guys are doing well over there with having, you know, with having so many problems. You are really doing well. What, I mean, interpret the financial situation. Who is holding all this up in the air? Who's holding all these balloons and all these plates in the air?
There certainly is manipulation of the markets that goes on, but I wouldn't blame this type of rebound simply on manipulation. I think it truly is Twilight Zone. So when you see really bad data coming out of a given area, you can almost guarantee at this point that their markets are going to shoot up the next day. It is completely opposite to what you would expect, but it is the new normal. And here in Japan, I mean, classic case, horrible GDP numbers coming out for the sixth time in 6 years. Japanese, there's been a negative quarter-on-quarter GDP growth rate, which means, I mean, the country keeps falling back towards recession, despite all of this, you know, billions of yen that they've been pumping into the system over the last few years. It keeps happening. And they've just confirmed now the sixth time in 6 years that they've fallen back towards the negative GDP growth. And it's even worse than they were expecting. So what happens? Yeah, the Nikkei goes up 7%. It's ridiculous, but it is because they know really bad data means that the central banks are going to step in and provide more of this funny money. And the funny money is what keeps the party going. So, hey, it's a good news. And until that breaks, until there is a point when a central bank either doesn't step in with more funny money, you know, manna from heaven, or when they do step in and nothing happens, once that breaks, I think we're going to see some sort of really hard return to reality. What goes up must come down. Mm-hmm. But as long as the party's going, there's a lot of people that are happy to climb on board with it.
That's exactly right. As long as the funny money's coming in, because they have confused the American people with resources. You know, we don't making anything anymore. So when you don't make anything, you don't have any money. So what you do is you just create more money and, hey, problem solved. And that's exactly what they're doing. So without a QE, I do not see any answer whatsoever. And by the way, I did hear one person on CNN the other day say, when in talking about the $19 trillion debt, finally hit me with a bit of reality by saying, there's no way we can pay that off. And I was like, thank you so much for saying that. Because the game is, you know, well, we'll just pay off this debt and we'll all be okay. I mean, they're keeping a game going here, and they're how they're manipulating the price of gold, I don't understand, and silver and platinum probably. I don't understand. Do you have any idea, James?
Gold and silver, I mean, that's there's all sorts of skullduggery that goes on there. And I think you've got to turn to GATA.org, G-A-T-A, the Gold Antitrust Action Association, and places like that to get the full picture on that. But, I mean, they're keeping the beach ball under the water one way or another. And I think that benefits a lot of different players, including people like China, the Bank of China, which the People's Bank of China, which is trying to stock up on as much gold as possible because they seem to know what's coming down the line. And it really benefits them to have a low gold price. We did just see, though, a few days ago, a $65 spike in the price of gold in a single day. I mean, there are some big signs that there are some big volatility out there, and volatility is, I think, the first sign of the snapping point being reached. So, I have no crystal ball to tell you what time frame this is going to take place in, but the reality, the bubble in more ways than one, I guess, that we've been living in the last 8 years of QE craziness cannot last forever, and it's only a question of when the Piper comes calling.
Yeah, I think the amount of paper gold compared to the amount of real gold has had an impact on the price of gold and diluting the price of gold also. That's just my own opinion. We'll be back after this 3-minute break. If you would like to talk with the James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com, give us a call at 855-995-6923, 855-995-6923. Welcome back to Power Hour. Thank you for joining us this Monday morning. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I did a lot of sewing and loved every single minute of it. It was awesome. Take care of your own world. Make your own world what you want it to be. We're talking to James Corbett today, and he has a world of, well, he is separate and apart from most journalists because he thinks, he writes, he says, he speaks what he believes in. Let's see, Keith, who's our first caller, Keith?
It's going to be Robert from California.
Robert in California. Robert, you are up on the air with James Corbett. Go ahead, please, Robert.
Once again, I'm in Canada, actually, but...
Oh!
That's okay.
Sorry about that. Man, major mistakes.
Here we have another sub-agenda to the Zika virus I wanted to pose to you, James. Neurological damage from radiation. You're seeing a cluster of encephalitis near Hanford. You're seeing Fallujah and its horror stories. You're seeing Timothy Musso, professor, finding smaller bird brains near Chernobyl, et cetera, et cetera. So just comment on that as a because there's so many old leaking nuclear power plants, plus Fukushima and so on. And I'm just wondering whether the growing phenomenon of encephalitis that might be associated with more radiation in the environment is sort of being diverted away from.
I guess there's two different ways to think of that. One is that Zika is kind of covering up those problems, and then the other is that they could actually use some sort of Zika viral, you know, hype to be the causal agent that they pin the blame on for those types of things, which are two slightly different concepts. But the first, again, yes, I mean, I think it is important to understand that what they choose to focus on, why they choose to focus on Zika, for example, rather than CMV, what is it, cytomegalovirus, which is much more common than Zika and causes much more microcephaly. But you've probably never heard of it, and no one's freaking out about it. Why? Because Zika is just the flavor of the week. So they can just parade things in front of you just by media attention and get you distracted away from things like encephalitis clustering around nuclear sites. But until there's some sort of Zika, you know, viral outbreak in the vicinity of a bunch of different nuclear reactors, I don't think that would be the way they're going to try to cover up that encephalitis.
All right. Thank you very much for the phone call, Robert, in Canada.
Next, you have Sherry from Missouri.
Sherry in Missouri. Sherry, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Yes. I was wondering if he thought that Corexit could be a contributing factor since it was sprayed in the Gulf after the spill. And secondly, if it could be an economic target to Brazil hosting the Summer Olympics and because they joined the BRICS banks. I'll listen offline. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Sherry.
Very interesting. Corexit. Yeah, a couple of interesting things. Corexit, yes, well, I mean, if so, then why is it only in that part of Brazil, and why is it how many years later? 5 years? Whatever it's been. I'd need some more to go on. Otherwise, I think it's about as valid as the speculation about the Zika link. There's not much to go on. Is it retaliation against Brazil for joining the BRICS and the BRICS Bank? I think it is interesting that the Summer Olympics is going to be in Brazil this year. So I think there is definitely some sort of news vector that could go on there, and perhaps the potential for this, you know, for them to spread whatever bioweapon they want around the world and blame it on Zika. I mean, that's a possibility. But retaliation for the BRICS Bank, I don't buy, if for nothing else than because the BRICS Bank is nothing other than a subset of the IMF. And for those who don't know about it, check out the BRICS Bank Vice President, Paulo Batista, who just happens to be the IMF's executive director. It's the same people. This is not a war between the BRICS and the IMF or anything.
Wow.
They are all on the same team. They are all for Team Globalism.
Goodness. Oh my gosh. That is incredible. Hey,
out.
I want to thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a wonderful program. Excellent information on the Zika virus and really makes you think. And, you know, that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, FukushimaUpdate.com. Thank you so much, James, for joining us in the Power Hour today.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a blessed day. We'll be back 1 minute, 10 seconds.